when we went to Washington, we said, look, you guys are getting some bad information. Not only is there plenty of corn, but it takes less to grow it every year. It's a little-known fact, we told them, that we're growing five times as much corn as our grandfathers did in the 1930s on 20% less land. We've cut the fertilizer needed to grow a bushel of corn by more than a third in just three decades. Congress and the people who affect their decisions need to know these facts, because decisions made on Capitol Hill and in the D.C. bureaucracy can make or break family farmers and the food, fuel, feed, and fiber they provide. The Farm Bill, of course, is central to our success. Members of the agriculture committees in Congress don't want to reopen the bill now or mess with the budget for farm programs, and we agree. The bill is a five-year contract with farmers that should not be broken. We support continuing reforms that would be unnecessary payments to farmers, but give them a better safety net when they really need it. President Obama has made no secret he's anxious to effect big changes in agriculture, like lopping $10 billion off farm payments in his proposed budget. And that sounds great until you look at the details of his proposal and realize it would hurt small farmers without fixing many of the farm bill's biggest problems. The energy bill, which encouraged expansion of ethanol production to make us less dependent on imported sources, is another bill that could help our entire economy, especially rural America. But this is not a given. California has just spoken, and it didn't seem to go well for ethanol. We are hopeful there will be some opportunities once again to insert facts and science that reflect modern ag practices and productivity. Now we wait to see what EPA will say about adding more ethanol to gasoline and how much making ethanol affects the environment. All we ask is that people consider the facts. When they consider ag policy in general, and corn in particular, that they be aware of our astonishing productivity and environmental progress. Yet, as we see from last year's ambush over food prices, all too often the facts get lost when vast sums of money are at stake. It didn't help either when the Ag Department stopped keeping track of fertilizer and pesticide use recently, when our progress has been the greatest ever. These are important statistics that funding should be restored. We have found a generally warm reception when we farmers come up to Capitol Hill and meet legislators. Everyone, even members of Congress, know that if we can't grow our own food efficiently, we face an unconscionable risk. And they know American farmers are one of our biggest assets, the most productive, the most innovative, the most environmentally sensitive farmers in the world. Now we have to make sure that people remember the facts. I'd like to turn this over to Ross Corvus now. Thanks, Ross.
Thanks, Mark, and thanks to all of you on the line. As Mark just mentioned briefly, California has been in the news with the California Resources Board taking the lead in curbing greenhouse gases by approving the country's first low-carbon fuel standard to lower greenhouse gas emissions from transportation fuel production and use by 10% by 2020. CARB stated this new rule would support the use of alternative fuels like ethanol, but it gave average Midwest corn ethanol a carbon rating roughly the same as gasoline. It's not, as you know, that ethanol burns dirtier than gasoline. It doesn't, of course. The new rule includes what are called indirect land use effects that account for almost one-third of the supposed carbon content. Some environmentalists argue that corn grown from ethanol displaces food crops. The world's farmers, in turn, wind up planting those crops on environmentally sensitive lands like the Amazon, releasing greenhouse gases when they cut down trees or till the soil. The debate, however, continues to rage over the measurements of these indirect effects. We've had scientific studies, but not enough to answer the questions adequately. CARB acknowledged when they released the report that the jury is still out and said they will continue to scrutinize these secondary environmental impacts over the next 2 years. One thing California should consider is the productivity of American farmers, as Mark mentioned earlier, that we're basically producing five times as many crops as we did in the 1930s on 20% less land. The advances in biotechnology we've seen are as game-changing as the introduction of tractor or later industrial pesticides and fertilizer, and we expect corn yields to continue to increase, perhaps reaching 300 bushels per acre by 2030. That would be about 24 billion bushels, or roughly twice what we would grow this year. As corn farmers get more productive, so does corn's environmental impact abate. More productivity per acre, as Mark mentioned earlier, means we produce more corn on the same acres. There is no land use effect because we are simply not using more land. And it's important to understand this issue because the draft of the Waxman-Markey Energy and Climate Change Bill includes a section mandating a low-carbon fuel standard. It's important for any federal law to reflect these new productivity and other relevant factors. And the USDA just said recently that farmers will plant about the same amount of corn acres this year as last year, and down about 8% from the acreage planted in 2007. That deflates the theory that a mad scramble to grow more ethanol will somehow displace other crops. Thanks, and now I'll turn it over to Darren for his comments.
Thanks, Ross, and thanks again all of you for being here. Obviously, we're grateful for the opportunity to talk to you about farm policy and the role corn plays in it. Well, clearly, 2009 is a very important year for farmers. We have a new president who has made some strong ideas about food and farming and who isn't adverse to shaking things up, and a new Secretary of Agriculture. We're looking forward to working with the administration, looking to make farming an even more efficient, even more environmentally sound business. We're very pleased with the selection of Mr. Vilsack, since he's been a supporter of both corn and ethanol. We also know he was a fair and tough-minded governor, and we fully expect he'll display the same traits as head of the Ag Department. And those aren't the only changes. All sorts of new trends are coming to the forefront now. The rise of the foodie movement and its insistence on local, sustainable, organic farming, concern about food safety, the interest in diet as a public health question, and our obesity epidemic. Truly big changes are coming to our food system. It was actually the period from late 2007 through the middle of last year that was the watershed. In 2007, Congress passed the Energy Bill, which required 36 billion gallons of biofuels by the year 2022. That was great for farmers because it gave us a new market for corn. And as a corn farmer, let me tell you, we need that new market because with the new generation of biotech seeds and our productivity going through the roof, we're going to have plenty of bushels to go around. But society's petroleum use is growing too. By the end of last year, the U.S. has had the capacity to produce more than 10.8 billion gallons of ethanol, displacing more than 7% of the total annual domestic gasoline use. This year, we'll make it 13 billion gallons of ethanol. And consider that up to $30 per barrel of oil costs are related to military costs linked to our involvement in the Middle East. We can't leave energy security out of the equation. Ross already spoke about the potential impact of the California decision and the importance of EPA's hugely important decision on life cycle carbon emissions. But I will say one thing, the theme of our call today. Let's not make critical decisions like this without all the facts at hand, without a fair comparison of what it takes to make a gallon of gas to a gallon of ethanol. I firmly believe that our productivity trends means we'll have no problem supplying enough corn for food, animal feed, ethanol, and other industrial uses without planting more acreage in America or anywhere else. The same, of course, goes for the Farm Bill, which Congress passed in the middle of the last year. Critics, we corn farmers included, thought it was time for a change. We argued that farm bill expenditures should focus on a better safety net and only when we need it most, as in the event of a disaster. Government help isn't necessary when yields are good and prices make it profitable to grow corn. After a big fight, reformers got the ACRE program into the bill. ACRE, as you know, considers overall farm stability instead of market price only. It's a much fairer, more reasonable market-based solution. Let me quote the Iowa State Center for Agriculture and Rural Development. Changing how subsidy programs operate is critical to achieving reform that has a long-term impact, and we couldn't agree more. We'll be working to expand the ACRE program when the Farm Bill comes up again. We'll be laying that groundwork now, and I'll stop there. We'll be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, gentlemen. Darren, the sign-up for the ACRE program that was introduced in the last Farm Bill that Ross just mentioned commenced this week. How significant a change in farm policy is this? Are you going to be using it, and why or why not?
Well, the ACRE program is a great opportunity for growers to enhance their safety net. We will be using it on our farm. It's an opportunity to let the marketplace set our price instead of relying on government subsidies. And by doing that, what the ACRE program will do is it will take into account both price and yield for your state level and your farm. And if there is a disaster or if the price declines sharply, there's an opportunity for growers to take advantage of this program by providing that safety net, which really ties in very well with their current crop insurance program. And what that does is it just ensures those shallow losses that the normal crop insurance programs have not enable us to protect against in the past. And the acre program is a very good way change in this farm bill. We think it's a wave of the future where we're using, again, taxpayer dollars only in times of need, not when we have good prices or good crops. So we think in the future farm bills, this is where the government policy will go.
Okay, thanks. Operator, do we have a question at this point?
Yes, we will take our first question from Cindy Zimmerman with DomesticFuel.com.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This week, farm broadcasters met at USDA, and ethanol was a topic of discussion as they met with different officials at USDA. USDA's chief economist, Joe Glauber, was asked about the increase in the blend rate, which is before EPA, and he indicated that he kind of indicated that the ethanol blend rate is not as important regarding the growth of ethanol or the use of ethanol in this country as the mandated renewable fuel standard. I just ask your opinion of that, what you think about it. Are these two issues, the ethanol blend rate and the renewable fuel standard, is one more important than the other, or are they both important?
Well, I'd be happy to handle that, Cindy. This is Mark Lambert. I think, you know, they are two different things, but they are linked, and I guess I would disagree a little bit. Because, you know, ultimately we need to use the ethanol that's being produced, and we're not doing that right now. And to have an abundance of ethanol that's sitting off the market, depressing prices and putting that new industry at risk while we continue to import foreign oil, to me is dangerous policy. So I think it's something we should address. We should address it as soon as possible to move more ethanol into the marketplace and to assure that that industry is still here and still healthy and growing when we're staring $4 gasoline square in the eyes again, because we will.
And if I could just add in, this is Ross, just real quickly, that if we had a higher blend rate and if the economics were favorable in some portion of the country, say Iowa, where there's a whole lot of ethanol, you could get the additional blending, and then maybe in Maine, if it's not favorable there, you would not get the additional blending. And if they needed to buy, if they had an obligation they had to meet, they could just do that by buying the RIN credits. So I think Joe is correct in the standpoint that if the blend economics are not good, then you're going to blend just the minimal amount. But if the blend economics are favorable, it will encourage those areas where it is to go beyond the 10% and perhaps relieve the pressure from some other area who prefer to buy those credits if they're available.
If I could follow up, I'd also like to ask what you think the chances are of, especially the 15% blend rate, being increased. What do you think of the chances, and what can corn growers or other people who are interested in having that blend rate increased, what can they do?
Darren, that sounds like it's right up your alley.
Well, I'll address that. This is Darren Enan. Number one, you know, we think that there's a very good chance of getting increased blends. We feel the science is there, and EPA is definitely looking at the science. And so, you know, they have to go through their process and how they do things, but we're encouraged by the comments that the Secretary of ILSAC has made. We've been encouraged by comments Lisa Jackson, the Administrator of EPA, has made. But again, we need to let the EPA do their job, and that's what they're doing. Secondly, what growers can do is we need to get comments into the EPA relating back to how ethanol is important to growers, to their farms, to their families, how it's important to economic success in the Midwest and all across this country, and how it's important for energy security. And so it's very important for growers to get letters wrote into the EPA, as well as making email comments. You can go to National Corn Growers website. There's a link there that can get growers to the EPA, and even go to the state corn grower associations have links on their site. So it's very important that we get those comments in.
Again, as a reminder, please press *1 if you have a question. And our next question comes from Pat Hill with DTN Media.
I wondered if I could ask a little bit about the cap and trade and carbon credit legislation that's going to be coming up. We just have done a survey of DTN readers, and it shows still a lot of skepticism among farmers about whether greenhouse gas really is a problem. And I'm wondering what kinds of things NCGA and other groups can do to get farmer support for these kinds of programs that may be coming along.
Well, this is Darren. I guess I'll try this first. couple things on cap and trade. The number one thing we feel agriculture needs to be at the table. And so National Corn Growers, many of the state associations are very engaged with Washington, D.C. and with the policymakers, making sure that ag's voice is heard. And we think that ag can play a very vital role in helping reduce greenhouse gases, helping store carbon in our soil. But again, we don't know exactly what that bill looks like. We have not taken an official position on it, but yet we're at the table. We want to make sure that it will be good for our growers and good for the rural areas. And again, we're kind of in just the observation mode at this point until some specific language gets put on the table.
This is Mark Lambert. I guess I would add one thing to that. There's little doubt that, you know, industry and environmental groups, associations, there's going to be intense lobbying on this whole issue. And that's one of the reasons that the Corn Farmers Coalition exists. It's not for any single issue. But we're trying to inject facts into the public debate, because what we're finding is there is a sore lacking of the right information, because agriculture is changing so rapidly. You know, if we're going to discuss climate change or land use or any of those things, we have to understand where this industry is today and where we might be going very shortly as a starting point. You know, the Corn Farmers Coalition is based on the whole concept of facts don't lie. And most of these facts, we're getting them from government, and sometimes they're being ignored. I mean, the industry has made huge improvements in terms of reducing fertilizer use. We're making huge improvements in cutting soil erosion. Our productivity is going through the roof on less land than we've ever used to grow the crop before. I mean, these are key points of information that, you know, you've got to know that before you discuss any issue.
Okay, well, I have one question that I'd like to address to the group, and that would be regarding the California decision last week on ethanol. Where do you gentlemen see things going from here? I mean, is this likely to have an impact on the EPA's decision coming up, and how do you think that will go?
Well, this is Ross. I'll start out and say, there's a fairly limited amount of knowledge about many of these things, so will it have an impact on what EPA does? It certainly could, because they're probably talking to some of the same people for background information, et cetera. But I think one important difference is that the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard is just what it says. It is focused on low carbon fuel. That's the charge out of the state legislature. That's the charge out of the governor to lower the carbon footprint of the economy in California. In terms of EPA, they have a wider mandate coming out of 2007 energy bill, because that bill was called the Energy Security Independence Act. So it's to deal with the environmental side, but also some of the national security things that Darren talked about earlier. So the EPA has somewhat of a broader mandate, and they'll have to try to blend together those two things and see where they come out. But certainly they will be looking at some of the same information that the California people were looking at.
Well, I guess that that concludes our event. Thank you all for attending. We very much appreciate it. We especially appreciate the opportunity to get the facts out about the corn crop and corn farmers. Thank you again.